Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm honored and privileged to welcome a very highly decorated soldier from the Indian Army, Lieutenant General Vinod Bhatia. General Bhatia, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ashutosh Garg. Thank you indeed. It's a great honor to be on a platform, and Jai Hind to all your viewers.
Thank you so much. General Bhatia is the former Director General of Military Operations. He is a Param Vishish Seva Medal, an Ati Vishish Seva Medal, and a Sena Medal. And for those of you who don't know, these awards are given by the President of India. He's an expert in disaster management. He's an author of several papers, and he's been recognized, awarded, and felicitated several times. So, General, I want to start with a simple question that I ask a lot of senior people like you. From a young cadet at the NDA and the Indian Military Academy to a three-star general, what did you do right to reach the top? And what were some of your learnings and challenges?
I suppose luck. You are lucky, and 40 years is not easy.
Correct.
But then, as they say, that luck is 99% perseverance.
Mm.
So I suppose, other than luck, I did focus on my job. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed every moment of it, actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's important. So you've got to be happy in what you do.
Correct.
So that happiness was there. I was a diehard army man, right from in third class. I decided to join the army.
Wow.
And my parents said, come on, Vinod, you got to study first. I said, that's why I don't want to join the army, because I don't want to study.
Okay.
And unfortunately, I've been studying ever since. Even my class 10th, my principal said, Vinod, you can't pass your 10th pass.
Hmm.
I said, sir, I passed my NDA, passed my 10th, is it done?
Hmm.
But then after one constant, I think, effort to move ahead, to move on, the constant learning process. And you got to be focused always. There are no errors in that, because
Correct.
Errors you lose life. And life is very important. You can't lose lives.
Absolutely.
The men have to trust you, actually.
Mm.
So from a second lieutenant to a lieutenant general is 40 years, and I joined the parachute regiment, which is the elite one. And it is difficult to be selected, because the Indian Army is the largest voluntary force in the world.
Absolutely.
And the parachute regiment is the voluntary force among the Indian Army.
Mm.
And then you're probated. So I think I was very, very lucky in that. And I joined a very good battalion, 6th Para. They taught me, as they say in the paratroops, we are a bunch of misfits who fit well together,
mm-hmm.
but then fitted well together.
Mm.
Another thing I think I owe is to honesty.
Correct.
And when I say honesty, I don't mean honesty in the financial terms.
Mm.
I say honesty of intent, honesty of purpose, honesty of action, honesty in your what all you want to do, honesty in relationships.
Mm.
So that I think is a very important part of growing up. I got good mentors. I learned from them. My men were the best mentors, actually.
Absolutely.
They taught me so much.
Mm.
If I may take a little longer, I'll give you a small incident.
Absolutely.
You got to go and check the duties at night.
Mm-hmm.
So that everything is right. So I went to check the duty, and the time was at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So I was sitting in the mess. I was a non-drinker though, but then paratroopers are meant to drink. So I had a drink, because it was the done thing, the march went on. And when I went to check the duty, my JCO over there, so the Vision Singh, and he's 96 years old today, and we are in touch still.
Mm-hmm.
He took me all around, showed me what to do, what not to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, oh, I'll tell you one thing. I said, please. He says, never drink and come on duty.
Okay.
And something I followed up on.
Hmm.
It has been a tough one. It's not easy. It's a tough one. Mission, communication. You got to be focused on your mission. Mission comes first.
Hmm.
You got to develop the win-win sort of spirit in your men. You got to trust the men. Hmm. Never, ever lose your temper.
Hmm.
Because if you're angry, that means you're not in control of things.
Correct.
So these are something that I suppose I learned. I was lucky, I suppose.
Fantastic. I mean, you're being very, very modest. But I guess that's a part of General Bhatia. But one of the other things that I've often wondered, when senior people like you lead such large number of people, what is your leadership style that you know, encourages or makes people do whatever you would want them to do in battle or in different difficult terrains?
I think there's a very straightforward leadership style. It is follow me. In Hindi, we say mere piche mu. And the men trust you. They develop their trust in you. They know they have a confidence in you. You have a confidence in them. And when you move, they know that, say, you know, Bhatia sahab hai, fateh hogi, we will achieve victory, and we will return safe. So these are two important factors. Mission accomplishment, victory, and safety of the men. So they trust you to do that because you train them well, you associate with them. And you got to be good to your, you know, everywhere. It's team, basically. It's not you. You don't matter at all. Nobody if the team is not good enough. And one of the things which I always felt was that I keep the Bhagwan and the Jawan, the God and the men at the same pedestal.
Wow.
They're equal to me. They know exactly what I am doing, what I am meant for. There's no fraud. You cannot fool them. You cannot fool the gods above. You cannot fool the men. And that is, I think, one leadership quality which is a must, is your full trust, your honesty, your ownership of what you do. You should learn from your mistakes. Mistakes will occur. Mistakes will happen. There's nothing wrong with mistakes. You can't have the fear of failure. Most of us have a fear of failure. My comfort zone is, okay, I will not do anything, so I'll not do anything wrong. I will not fail. So if you're not failing, you're not succeeding. And, you know, army is high risk. It is high risk, high reward.
Correct.
You have to take the risk. And you have to be alert always. You know, in the NDA, there's a prayer, NDA prayer. And one sentence in the NDA prayer sticks to your lifetime. It says, oh God, help me to do the harder right than the easier wrong. It may be said, but the harder right than the easier wrong is something we have to follow in life. And especially when you are heading an organization or part of an organization, part of the organization, and that pays dividends. Never ever, you know, scold anyone, punish anyone. You have to carry them along. Well, he's being the best one. You have to have tolerance for ambiguity. You have to have tolerance for fools also. It's very important. Tolerance. I may sound very foolish in saying.
No, well said. Well said.
You know, the good you will always take along. The good is easier part of it. The more difficult part is the passengers, what you call the people who do mistakes. You want to recognize everyone's worth and make them a part, essential part of your team. It's teamwork. It's a clockwork. We have done so many operations. I was part of the Maldives operation, my commander, it was synchronized. It was just teamwork because we trained so hard and we trusted each other. And especially on the paratroopers, you have to trust each other. When you jump out from an aircraft, you are the first one.
Correct. Right? Correct.
The leader. Everyone follows you. And you are the heaviest loaded one. You know, everyone jobs a bad loads over 25 kgs. But as a leader, you have to have more than about 30 kgs of load on you.
Wow.
And I have a 21 bones broken. But everyone, you know, told me, Khade sahab, thi bajara, thi bajara, chalo. You carry it on.
Fantastic.
But as well, is more in the mind. You know, the mind space is very important.
Absolutely. Well said, sir. Well said. So, you know, one of the things that I've been speaking to a few senior army leaders, and one very interesting comment came from someone, and I'm going to ask you that as a question. It is often said that a Chinese soldier fights for his party, his political party, which is the People's Liberation Army. A Pakistani soldier fights for his religion, and an Indian soldier fights for his motherland. I'd love to get your perspective on this.
Absolutely right. You know, the PLA is the instrument of the Communist Party of China.
Correct, sir.
Right. So PLA is it's not an army of the nation. It's not citizens. It's a Communist Party. Whereas Pakistan, of course, as they say, Pakistan owns the nation. You know, but Pakistan army is citizens.
Correct.
But having said that, let me also say, both having dealt with the PLA and the Pakistani army, both are professionals. Both are good. Their drivers may be different.
Correct.
And always respect to adversary. Something we should never do is never underestimate adversary. And they are adversaries.
Yes.
Right? And whenever we dealt with them, they are professionals. The Pakistani army, their driving force may be religion. It is religion, rather. But it's a professional army. And so is the PLA professional army. Sure. That is why we had temporary along the borders for 40 years.
Yeah.
In high altitude area, where the tempers are very high and the temperature very low. Right? But it's not easy. So, but Indian soldiers are by far the best.
Correct.
The Indian soldier costs the minimum, delivers the maximum. His resilience is far excellent. Mm-hmm. No, he can survive anywhere. Sustainability, survivability. And what do you like about this one? We're the most battle-hardened, combat-rich force anywhere in the world, especially mm-hmm. in hybrid war. No, we could do Kargil, imagine.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Who could ever do Kargil?
Well said.
One of the defense attaches there was taken after Kargil mm-hmm. happened to be there.
Mm-hmm.
He says, well, you must be crazy to attack such features. I said, of course, it's all about being crazy. He said, would have nuked them. Mm-hmm. Would have nuked them.
Mm-hmm.
So if we could do Kargil, if we can do the NDC, what we have mm-hmm. done there, I think we can do anything.
Absolutely. Well said.
So, men are very good. Our army is very, very good.
Oh, absolutely.
And what drives us? What drives us is the Nam Namah Krishna.
Mm.
The name, the salt, the loyalty,
mm.
and the Nishan is the flag. So that is our unit is there. My unit is there. My regiment is there. My army is there. My nation comes first and foremost every time.
Mm. Mm.
And the Nam Namah Nishan and what we imbibe into them as saying Wafadari, Bahadari, mm-hmm. Imandari.
Mm.
No. Be loyal, be brave, and be honest.
Yeah.
So these are few things which really drive us.
Yeah, I agree with you. I completely agree with you. General, moving on, my father was in the 1962 war up in, and I used to hear from him all about all the challenges of equipment, etc. Today's army is a much, much more modern army. How has technology changed the army over the last four decades that you have been a part of it?
No, honestly, today we live in a different world altogether. I joined in 1974. I was trained in 1970. Technology was just not there.
Correct.
There was no technology. No, we used bicycles and bikes and regular bikes. But today, everything is about technology. No, it's not only geopolitics. It's not only geostrategy. It's not only geoeconomics. It's geotechnology which drives the world powers.
Correct.
And honestly, I think we are a little lethargic in that.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to absorb induct the technologies, we've got to absorb the technology, we've got to exploit them. But again, the Indian soldier is his adaptability is fantastic. When the
Correct.
Technology comes in, the way he adapts to it, the way he exploits it, he may not be very well educated, as we say.
Mm-hmm.
But education is not degrees alone. Education is a lot of experience on the job training. And we have imbibed some good technologies. I will not say that I'm happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
We need more and more.
Mm-hmm.
But at the cost of technology, we should also make sure that our ethos, our military ethos is not degraded because of technologies.
Right.
Because the man will still continue to drive the force, and he's very important. So today we live in a technological world. Everyone is on a 5.5. Earlier the 5.5 inch was the mind space. Today 5.5 inches is on a palm.
Mm.
So everything. And we are getting, we're not using our mind so much.
Mm.
If I have to calculate, I need a calculator to calculate. We never used anything. We had no aids. But we have to live in today's world, a network world, interconnected world, and technology, especially in warfare, is very important.
Mm. We're looking
at multiple warfare. Exporting technologies, reducing costs, being more cost-effective, efficient.
Mm.
So we'll have to look at, artificial intelligence in a big way, intelligence surveillance radars in a big way, especially along our unsettled borders with China and Pakistan, both along the LC.
Mm.
So we have to exploit technologies. And our men have, but 70 to 80% of the military hardware is low to medium technologies.
Mm.
It's only about 15 to 20% is critical technologies.
Mm.
This technology should be Indian in character, Indian in
correct
usage.
Mm.
It should adapt to us. We're a tropical country. We are not ruggedized to that. We can't just buy technology and then adapt it. Though I'm going to take a little longer. The Indian soldiers, and when I say soldier, I mean sailors and air warriors. Also.
Absolutely.
No, look at us. We got military hardware from Russia,
65%.
We got from US. We got from France, we got from Israel, we got from South Africa, and all this comes to us, and I don't know how we manage it. It's something I've been studying all along, and we exploit all this.
Well said.
So Indian condition.
Mm.
So that is where I think we have the adaptability and the flexibility and the will to absorb and adapt.
Very, very good. So you also mentioned, sir, about artificial intelligence a little bit. Now is the age of cyberspace, space wars, President Trump even went and formed a minister, you know, I think a unit for cyber war or space war. I'd love to get your perspective on what you see as the future of war in the world. Of course, leaving aside what is happening in Ukraine and Russia, and I'd love to get your perspective on that as well.
We are looking at multi-domain warfare. Mm. Future warfare will be multi-domain, multi-dimensional, fought in many key battle spaces. Mm. It is not only linear, which you are talking about. The linear part will be a very essential, you know, subset of the war.
Mm.
That is not going to go away anywhere. You know, what we talk about conventional war, but a full spectrum of war today, right from low intensity conflict, where we also have hybrid wars, gray zone warfare, and right up to the nuclear. And including the cyberspace, including space, special operations, these are the future warfare domains. Why do nations go to war? Nations go to war to impose their will on the adversary.
Correct.
And that is why, of course, war is not an option ever. Mm-hmm. War is always a last.
Correct.
But today, I don't need to go to war to impose my will. I have virtual societal warfare. Look at the amount of interconnected people we have. Using smartphones in India, social media platforms, and what we believe, we have not changed our thought process. I see so many posts in social media. Look at the Ukraine war. The information war is all, it's all about, we don't know what's really happening. Information war is going on. So today I have a virtual societal warfare. We will change the beliefs of the society. I change the beliefs of the people, beliefs of individual. And there are indicators that even the US election will interfere with the social media. So we are not safe. We'll have to look at cyberspace. Cyber is very critical. And because it can affect critical sectors all along. When we talk about national security today, it's about comprehensive national security. It is not only in the borders, our adversary. And when we talk about cyberspace, look at the financial sector. If they close on the financial sector even for a day, what happens? Look at the power sector. We had rumors of Mumbai closing down, Delhi closing down. Look at the transportation sector, the air sector. The education sector is the worst, actually. If you ask me, today, I'm a grandfather, my grandchildren. They look at all the cartoons. So our value system is what can interfere. So tomorrow when we talk about artificial intelligence, it tells us what to do. Each one of us has got 5,000 data points. It is data. It's all about data.
Correct.
Artificial intelligence is not about data. Big data. Whatever. 5,000 data points stored somewhere in the world. Everyone knows me better than I know myself. So we need to be not only data protection, not only data safety. We have to be sovereignty in data. So we'll have to look at technology and new age warfare in all its aspects. Non-traditional security challenges. It's not a traditional security.
Wonderful.
It's a big game altogether.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd also like to get your perspective, sir, on what is happening between Ukraine and Russia. I mean, I'm sure you are observing and you have a strong set of views on it. I'd love to get your perspective on what is going on and why is it happening.
I think it has been in the making for quite some time.
Okay.
If you look at the historical aspects, the conflict has been in the making. And we have to understand that nations have the national interests, and national interests do take priority. It's just that the timing is totally incorrect after COVID. We are just recovering from COVID. The world is topsy-turvy. It's not a new world order, it's a new world disorder. And then after COVID, we have this war which threatens to spread to the European world. Europe, of course, controls a lot of things. The US is there. Russia is a big power. Let's face that. And I feel Russia had a pause. I do believe that. Because the national interest was threatened. No nation wants to fight a war on its borders. Whether it's the US, Russia, China, India, you name it. You always carry the war into your adversary's territory.
Correct.
That's the basic concept of war. That I carry the war into my adversary, in the adversary's territory. So when Russia felt threatened, and Russia had given enough warning, don't do it, don't do it. The expansion of NATO has taken place. 16 countries have joined after 1991. If you look at all this, I'm totally looking from a geostrategic and a strategic angle, defense.
Yes, absolutely.
And I do feel, let me, be on Russia's side for once. It's very easy to be on the Western side.
Correct.
We all know this perspective. Russia only employed about less than 200,000 troops. So when they said it's taken time, I think Russia is managing it well. It's not it's not going for annihilation. It's not going for mass destruction. It could have gone for mass fires, missiles. It has the wherewithal. It has, it has got two million troops. It's only using 200,000. So that's what Russia is. And Russia is securing its interests. It is securing the southern portion, the Black Sea, which is very important, Russia, the Donbas region, and to the north. It's securing itself. Whereas I think the Americans also, I must say, they did misjudge and misread the Russian, not the intent, the rhetoric, what you call it. And the gainer in all this will be China.
Correct.
The gainer will be China. Nothing wrong with it.
Absolutely.
India, I think India has done very well. We have looked after it. We should not sit on the moral high ground. We don't really. Who are we to judge the moral high ground of either the US, the Europeans, or the Russians? So we have done very well. We should look after our interests. It is a balance of power game going on. And India is the balancing power. But we should look at balance of interest, not balance of power. Rather, we should look at balance. We should balance the balance of power and balance of interest. We got 1.4 billion people. Their well-being is very important to us.
True.
So why should I not look at my own interest? And that's what we are doing. So I think the Ukraine war will continue for some time. Till they achieve their objectives, the strategic intent they have laid down. Someone has to give in. Who gives it first? Who blinks first? That's easy.
Amazing, amazing. So I'm now, General, going to move to the next part of our conversation. And I'm sure you've spent a lot of time thinking about these when you were working as Director General Military Operations. I want to talk to you about China. What are the challenges China represents for us?
Well, you touched very raw now, because as a Director General Military Operations, my focus was mostly China. And that was the time in 2013 when we got the government of government sanction for raising the Christian forces, which we used to call the Mountain Strike Force, which is 90,274 men. It's not a mountain strike, much more than that. But it's not that China has sprung up all of a sudden. We've been planning this. You know, two divisions were raised in 2009, 2010. Then these raisings were there. But then everyone, you know, say, no, China is not a threat. It's a long-term threat. But that long-term has to become short-term sometime.
True.
Long-term cannot be indefinite and infinite. No, it is not that to the power end. So that is what exactly has happened. And we have unsettled borders. We have to understand that 3,488 kilometers of unsettled borders. These are certain pockets which both name. And that is what we have big powers, both of us, Asian times. So we got 37-38% of the world's population between the two countries, both nuclear armed. So the China challenge, I think, is to deter China aggressiveness is India's challenge. Or to deter China. Unfortunately, most of us don't understand China. And more than that, unfortunately, Chinese don't understand Indians. I thought I was very hopeful that with two strong leaders, Mr. Modi with his political capital, political clout, Xi Jinping, who follows Mao's diktat, and Mao's diktat also has good land borders, we could resolve the boundary question. But the China misunderstood us. You know, they thought they will resolve the boundary question by a little bit of force, by plotting. It didn't happen. Their strategic intent was not clear to us, frankly. We did not expect them to do what they did in 2020 when the world was fighting the COVID and India was doing very well. And China was surprised by India's resolve, India's resilience and all the world. We started late, but we did very well. So today we are at a stage where two of the world's largest armies face each other along the high Himalayas, which is not a very good sign. But on the positive side, after Galwan, you know, we had no incident since 25th October 1975 till Galwan.
Correct.
But after Galwan, again, there will be no escalation whatsoever. There's no escalation. So we have to look at the positives rather than, you know, read people's, you know, agendas that, you know, India can take on China and China can take on India. We are mature people. We are very old civilizations.
Correct.
And we are talking. We are talking at the political level. We are talking at the military level. We are talking at the diplomatic level. 15 rounds of talks between the military leaders. 10 rounds of talks between the WMCC, which is the working mechanism. We had the Foreign Minister Wang Yi coming. There's a special minister talk. The NSA and Wang Yi are talking. The EM and the Foreign Minister talking. So I think we'll resolve our talk. And we should not be in a hurry. With China, when you play, it's a game of patience. Sundramcho took 6.5 years to resolve.
Absolutely.
But But we have to understand that the enemy is a 3D strategy.
Mm-hmm.
We need to defend the LEC, we need to dominate the seas, and we need to deter China's aggressiveness by binding to balance with like-minded nations, give you a congruous interest.
Mm-hmm. And I'd also like to get your view, since you spoke about dominating the sea and get like-minded people. I'd like to get your perspective on the Quad, sir.
I think Quad is an excellent forum. We have congruous of interest with Japan, US, with
Australia,
especially in the Indo-Pacific, as we call it now, Asia-Pacific. The trade passes through there. And that also happens to be China's strategic vulnerabilities and strategic concerns.
Mm.
So we have to, China's insensitive to our concerns along the LEC.
Mm.
And India is no longer that Indian. Today, India is a risen, responsible, resilient nation. We are a regional power. We are a global leader.
Correct.
So you cannot be insensitive to our concerns and say, no, I'll do what I have to do.
Mm.
So I think Quad is a very good forum for that. Unfortunately, Quad does not have a security sort of a content, direct security content.
Mm.
And that also serves us right because we look at strategic autonomy. That's very important to us.
Mm.
So territorial integrity is, they can have no violation of territorial integrity. We are a big power.
Mm.
We can defend ourselves. And we have to ensure sovereignty, which is also very, strategic sovereignty is important to us. We always maintain that.
Correct.
So I think we will deal with China. Let it continue. We have little strength with China. It's not that we don't have.
Mm.
But a revised China policy, I must say, should not be anti-China.
Correct.
No, there's not an anti-China feeling. Of course, I feel hurt at what they did to us.
Mm.
But it should be pro-India.
Mm.
The difference between being anti-China and pro-India, we should look at being a pro-India policy.
Mm.
Well
said. And I think what has happened is that, after Doklam, the general sentiment amongst the masses in our country has become pro-India. And I think what you said is very right, that our policy has to be pro-India.
Absolutely. We are a great nation, and let's start believing in ourselves. Let's start projecting it. Let's see us, sit on the high table.
Mm.
Why not? All the elite clubs, we should be driving those clubs, like whether it's WTO, especially World Bank, and you being there, you've been a prominent, right?
Mm.
How important it is for a nation to grow. We've not been given a rightful due in the Committee of Nations, honestly. And there's a time we get there now.
Absolutely. Well said, sir. So I'm now going to come to the last part of our conversation, and no conversation with an army general can be complete without Pakistan, sir. So I have to ask you, even what's happening today between Mr. Imran Khan and General Bajwa, and what we read about, Pakistan is a nation in turmoil, and it's been like this since 1947. What are your thoughts on handling our neighbor? At least with China, we still do $100 billion worth of business. I'd love to get your perspective on what is happening in China and what are the answers?
Oh, Pakistan, I feel, is a mischievous neighbor.
Hmm.
Unfortunately, the very, the driving force behind the Pakistan policies is anti-India.
Hmm.
It is not the growth of Pakistan they're looking at.
Right.
If India loses, they think they win. It is not so. It doesn't happen that way.
Hmm.
And in the end, they have paid the cost for it. They wage this proxy war, which is a low-cost, high-effect war for about 3 decades plus now. Whether it started in Punjab, they didn't succeed. The Kashmir, terrorist operations all over India. Many capital, Delhi, Mumbai, Ahmedabad, Bangalore, you name it, we all been there. But things are changing now. Things are changing. And I'm a political man. I'm not.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm a soldier.
Yeah.
But things are changing, and the Pakistani army has to pay the cost because the Pakistani army drives India policy. It is the relevance of the Pakistani army, whether domestic relevance, economic relevance, political relevance, is based on an anti-India policy.
Right?
So if India was not there, the Pakistani army, the relevance would not be there.
Mm.
So we have to understand that. So we have to raise the cost of the Pakistani army as such. How do we do that? By degrading them. We did that in Uri. I think Uri was a fantastic a lot of people said that surgical strikes.
Mm.
I went out and said for the first time, surgical strikes happened for the first time. Earlier, cross-border strikes. I've done it.
Mm.
I mean, part of it, both planning and execution.
Mm.
But this was something different. Mm. So what we need to do is, how do we change Pakistan's behavior towards India in the mid to long? Immediate term, it's not going to happen.
Correct.
And Pakistan turmoil is not good for us, actually.
Hmm.
No, we need stable neighborhood.
Absolutely.
A reasonably stable Pakistan would be good for us.
Hmm.
But then Pakistan doesn't mend its ways ever.
Hmm.
And especially with Afghanistan, what is happening there, I think Pakistan is going to have a lot of trouble.
Hmm.
And we need to watch for Pakistan.
Hmm.
And the language that Pakistan understands is, again, getting onto the 3P strategy. The
January
3D strategy, 3P strategy.
Hmm.
We have to be preemptive.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be proactive. And we got to be punitive. They have to understand they have to pay the cost.
Yeah.
The low cost, high effect war has to go a high cost, low effect war.
Hmm.
And we are doing very well in Pakistan. But we touch wood. We haven't had a major incident since the Pulwama.
Hmm. Very interesting. So on that note of be preemptive, be proactive, and ask them to pay a penalty. And every time I speak to someone of your seniority and I speak to you and I'm reminded of the Naam Namak Nishan, it almost gives me a boost having grown up in an army officer's home. Thank you, General Bhatia, for speaking to me. Thank you for talking to me about your journey. You were very, very modest where you ascribed your success to luck. There's much more than luck that goes into reaching where you did or where you have. Thank you for talking to me, sir, about technology, about your views on China and your views on Pakistan. Thank you again, sir, and good luck to you.
Thank you, Vishal. It's been a wonderful conversation with you. Thank you very much. Honored indeed.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the brand called You Videocast and Podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.